Have you ever wanted to work in a flying ICU? Or maybe you're just passionate about saving lives. Right now you can realize your dream by applying to work for one of the best teams in the air medical industry. Air Methods is currently hiring qualified flight nurses, medics, and mechanics to join our air medical team. Check out our new salary and benefits packages. Visit airmethods.com/careers and apply today. That's airmethods.com/careers.
The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Everybody, Mike Verkest sitting behind the microphone with my best friend in the world, Eric Bauer, for a very special episode, number 200. Buddy, 200 episodes of the FlightBridge Ed Podcast.
Pretty exciting.
I mean, 200.
Yeah, so we're sitting here in Wilsonville, right outside of Portland.
Yep.
Here for the Ducks game.
Yep, go Ducks.
Planned this podcast. Mm-hmm. Wanted to do it with my brother. Mm. It's been an amazing, we're right at 10 years now with the FlightBridge Ed Podcast. And really, to think the idea of a podcast, I've said it many times, inspired by MCRIT, yeah. Inspired by his philosophy of bringing the highest level care down to the ED. And I, thought, well, gosh, why don't we just spread that across all disciplines? And you, the listener, you have really been gracious and kept listening. And we really appreciate that.
And that's really what we're going to celebrate today is the episodes that people have listened to the most. And we'll do a quick recap and talk about some of these. And the part that I always like is to try to figure out why did that resonate with the people the way it did. Some of them are pretty obvious. I mean, they're all kind of obvious to me anyway, but it's interesting to see how the numbers move depending on what the topic is. So maybe we can actually just talk about that now. What is it you've seen over 200 episodes? Why do people gravitate to the episodes they gravitate to? Is it because those are topics that are unfamiliar, uncomfortable, places where they feel like they need to improve their clinical care? Like, what is it? What do you think it is?
Yeah, just looking at the topics, I think that you hit on a few things. I think things that bring emotion. I think things that maybe each one of us identify as a weakness. Yeah. Topic areas that we may struggle in or don't feel confident in. I think those are definitely areas that I see from a pattern standpoint, yeah. Where we definitely have a higher total download for those episodes. And I think it comes down to also real heavy physiology also seems to get those downloads.
Well, and I think the other piece is a concept that you've talked about for a long time. And that's really just the chunks, right? Spaced repetition on things. And so you can see over 200 episodes, we've talked about, the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. You've talked about ventilator management. You've talked about, there's a number of things that all sort of jive together, right? And I think that spaced repetition is the important piece. And that actually bears out a little bit in these episodes we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I think we're reflecting back from the earliest episodes and now to C200, I definitely have seen myself grow. My confidence has grown, but there's also been times where I have lost confidence. There's been times where I've lost the creative side. And I think as you get to those higher number podcasts, you start feeling like there's not anything else to talk about. And so that's where you almost have to be more creative.
Yeah.
I definitely have went through periods, ebbs and flows, where that is simple. I think I'm in a very creative time right now. But previous to that, I was in a little bit of a lull. And yeah. I think that's all right. When you look at artists, you look at any professional person, I think we all go through those ebbs and flows. And I think if you talk to artists, you talk to writers, poets, I guarantee they would say there are times where they're super creative and there's times they just need a break.
Yeah.
I think early on, it was very easy for me to write a script and look at it from a standpoint of those chunks and say, all right, I'm going to do this podcast next. That's going to build on this and this and this. But now you're number 200.
Yeah.
And so I think it's exciting to reflect back. And that's what this episode's all about, is reflecting back on these topics that you, the listener, really have shown to be the favorites.
Well, I think that's a great answer. We're going to talk about 10 podcasts, but the first five, I'm not going to say we're going to zip through, but we're kind of going to zip through. We're given a hat tip. We're giving them the honorable mention. And so let's just jump off to number 10, which was episode 45. Let's go way back in time, 2015. And like I mentioned, the oxyhemoglobin disassociation curve, a resuscitation paradigm that had just shy of 19,000 downloads. And that still to this day is a topic that, because I see it in classes when we go teach, right? Like somebody in left shift, right? If you don't understand the physiology of that, and you see that O2 sat of 94%, you think, oh, that's great, versus the guy with 89% sitting right next to him. And this is your words. We naturally gravitate to the lower SpO2 thinking they're a sicker person. But if you understand at the end of the day, but that's not really kind of how this works, it makes sense to me that this had a lot of downloads.
Yeah. I myself obviously love the deep physiology. I love the cellular stuff. That's the shock states. I love that. It makes me tick.
Yeah.
So it has always been a topic I've loved, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I almost felt robbed in my early education. I think you have to understand, we all have to learn to a certain point. They have to cut it off at some point.
Yeah.
But when I finally did learn from the critical care perspective what the oxyhemoglobin curve was all about and how that affected your decision making, and that patient you just talked about, 94% versus 89%, that truly could be the actual percent, SpO2 that reflects the true current oxygen status. But what it does is it makes you understand the big picture. It makes you take pause, think about the physiology, think about, all right, is that 94% truly a 94%, or do we have a higher affinity?
Exactly.
That's causing a falsely high SpO2. We're not dropping it off to our tissues, right? And we're now tissue hypoxic. Yep. So it makes you take pause. And that's why we get into the resuscitation paradigm and looking at what types of patients fall into the left shift, what types of patients fall into the right shift. And the majority of the patients that we're going to see in our field are going to be right shift patients. Let's just be honest. But it's important to take a second, think about that physiology, or we should say pathophysiology, right, when it's altered.
Right.
And then I love teaching it from the perspective of what is happening in homeostasis. What's happening right now? How do we deliver oxygen? Because that's the right shift. That's how we deliver oxygen. How we pick up oxygen is the left shift. Our lungs utilize that. So we often just teach in the critical care realm the pathophysiology standpoint, but there's a physiology side of that that maintains homeostasis.
Yeah. And not to get too far in the weeds, but I just spent a number of days editing a new course that's going to be coming out. And I was enthralled at every time you were going to present, or somebody was going to present something from a pathophysiology standpoint, I saw it every time. It's like, let's pause and let's talk about normal. Because you've got to have a grasp of the normal to even understand what's going to be happening when things aren't normal, right? So
absolutely.
Anyway, I thought that was awesome. All right, let's go down to number 9. This is actually not that far away from 45. This is episode 48. And this was the post-arrest nightmare in 2015. And again, right around 18,909 downloads. But what do you remember about that episode?
So this case really highlighted a difficult situation where we had iatrogenic causes that caused the patient to decline. Obviously, when we arrived, we found the patient in a really poor state. She was auto-triggering the ventilator. She had a past history of COPD. And really, it was highlighting all the different care issues that we encountered. You know, she didn't have good sedation. She was auto-triggering. She was in assist control. She had a history of that COPD was causing her to air trap a little bit, probably greater than somebody that was healthy. She had that upper GI bleed. She had lost a lot of volume. Her H&H was, I think, 5 and 18. They had given 2 units of blood and some FFP, but they were out of blood. They had dopamine on at 20 mics per kilo per minute, hemodynamically just crashing. So it really was a tough case in the beginning. My partner and I, it was Jake Coffey and I, we really worked well together and we were able to turn her around. And it really highlighted, as I said, where if you make some good changes, you know, we removed her from the ventilator. So that was really the focus of this podcast, was talking about coming in and assessing a really troublesome patient. We had no doctor on scene. Nurse left the room. Luckily had an ABG. And that, the other part of this podcast was she appeared to be an obstructive approach. The way when we walked in, the way she was retaining her auto peeps were very high. She appeared to be an obstructive approach based on the history we got from the nurse. And so if you've followed our education, you know the obstructive approach is about lowering that rate to 12. Well, if I wouldn't have asked for an ABG, I probably would have went down that road. But so it really highlighted for me that you have to really stop and assess. It's easy to get tunnel vision. So luckily I asked. They had an ABG and her pH was 6.79. And she had a PaCO2 in the low 20s. And so it was a compensatory. She had a partially compensated metabolic acidosis. Going back to her initial arrest, she had a small apneic period during the intubation attempt. Intubation attempt was one attempt, first pass success by the physician. He did nothing wrong, but she arrested right after that. So I think she actually had an arrest based on a pH issue. I think her CO2 climbed, dropped her pH even further. They got her back with 2 rounds of epi, some sodium bicarb. So it really highlighted for me the importance of stopping and reevaluating things from a team effort and the types of flights or calls, transfers that we all can get into. A lot of times they can be a lot worse than they need to be based on the care they've received previous.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to number 8 here. This one was just last year. This was episode 182 in April of 2020. And this is one that your beautiful bride, Ashley, when she kicked you out of the podcast booth, finally, again, because her episodes always do well. But this was a COVID-19 case study. And this was a nightmare case.
Yeah, it was, I think it's been interesting, and I think we're going to see definitely that she has a very popular following in the podcast that she's done. Not to get into the weeds on this podcast, right, you said under 20,000 downloads.
Yeah.
But really, this was early in the COVID treatment time. A lot of research had not been published yet. A lot of it was just more
we're really
trial and error.
We were a month into it,
basically.
Yeah.
She was seeing some stuff in the ED, and it was just a great overview of labs and different things that really the early literature was wanting to highlight in that treatment paradigm.
Yeah. All right. Number 7 is actually episode 160. And I'm happy to say this was a crossover episode from the EMS Lighthouse Project, which is a podcast that Dr. Jeff Jarvis and I do. He does it a lot more because he's a little hyper and when he gets something going in his brain, he just has to do it. So, but we've got a milestone episode 50 of that coming up and we're going to have something special for that as well. But Making Sense of Epi. This was a popular podcast on the Lighthouse site as well. And it still to this day remains an interesting topic because we just can't quite figure out what the deal is with Epi. We know you get more ROSC at the expense of the brain. So it's coming down to, is it timing? Is it dose? Is it how fast the first dose get? I'm like, no one really knows. And it's been an interesting thing. So if you're interested in sort of the role of cardiac arrest or of Epi in cardiac arrest, definitely one to check out. All right. Last honorable mention. This is number 6. This is episode 169, September 23rd, 2019. And this was a podcast that you did on the AVERT trial. And then subsequently, at the end of that, I do believe you challenged Dr. Jarvis and I to actually get in and dissect it from a methodology standpoint. But
So this was a trial done by Dr. Carrie Sims and her colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania. I definitely recommend you listen to the podcast and, just to keep this kind of short and sweet. She more had some anecdotal history with using vasopressin in a multi-systems trauma patient that had a massive transfusion. Protocol established on them was crashing in the ICU, and she thought, well, let me try vasopressin as a pressor and actually turn the patient around. She then did some preliminary stuff with, you know, looking at vasopressin and overall hormone loss in massive hemorrhage patients that are getting transfused, and really the citrate, what happens to that citrate load on those different parts of our red blood cells and hemoglobin and the 2,3-DPG and the encapsulation and destroying the vasopressin, et cetera. So these patients were then randomized, one to placebo, the other one to the treatment arm. Any patients that got over 5 units of blood products got one of the two. They initially were given a 4-unit bolus, and then the infusion of 0.04 units per minute over 48 hours. And it was to maintain a MAP of 65, obviously, which is standard in trauma. Really, the outcome, the main outcomes, the primary outcome was total volume of blood loss or blood transfused. Right. And that secondary endpoint included total volume of crystalloids transfused, vasopressor requirements, and secondary complications at 30-day mortality. You know, really what they identified is it did cause a decrease in overall blood administration, but it did not change mortality.
Right. And so, as I recall, that was basically Dr. Jarvis's takeaway too, was, and I could be wrong, but I think I'm going to try to quote him. It was basically this, when you're looking at study, there's a couple of things to look at. You know, is this a patient-centered outcome they were looking for? And in this case, he felt like, no, it was a reasonable outcome, but at the end of the day, probably doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing to point out. And it's fascinating. I would love to do a podcast on that specifically, because I don't think there's a lot of studies out there that truly show benefit at 30 days.
Oh, well, it's tough. I mean, look at the PAR trial, right?
Right.
I mean, that's a whole other story.
You might see benefit at 24 hours. You might see benefit, based on hospital stay or ICU stay or ventilator, you know, use, et cetera. But does it change overall mortality? And I think that's where it gets into all the complexities of their care. Yeah. How many other aspects affect their overall, you know, discharge to neurologic function?
Well, for sure. Yeah. Anyway, that's a good one. Go check out episode 169. Listen to that one, then go over and clip on over to the EMS Lighthouse project and take a listen. All right, let's jump into the top five. This one here, number five, I was super excited about because I talk about it to this day. And I remember the time and place, and it was about this time in 2018 where we were at AMTC. And I don't even remember how we ran into Tara and Lane. I think they just came by and said they were fans, and we just started talking.
You had talked to them. I didn't know anything about, you set the episode up.
Yeah.
And they came over, and I was just blown away.
Yeah. Yeah. And to this day, it still blows me away. But this is episode 145, Imagining the Unimaginable. And this one had just about 22,000 downloads. But what I want to say is, who cares about the downloads? The downloads, cool, neat. However, what I will say is their story, their situation, the things they faced, their nightmare scenario has really changed the industry a lot. So if you don't know this story, here's the short version. They were on a transfer, critical elderly patient in the back, and their pilot has a stroke just after they lift off. And you'll have to listen to the rest. There was a good outcome, obviously. But what it did, it really highlighted the safety aspect of sort of the HEMS industry. Internally, you know, we talk about fuel throttle, battery, rotor brake, right? We talk about all these things to do if there's an emergency. But how many times do you actually go out there and do those things? How many times do you actually go out there and engage in emergency procedures? How often are you the ones as the med crew really going out and doing these things? And I will say that probably at the time, not very many. But when people heard this episode, heard this story, heard their story, this has nothing to do with Flyberger. This is their story. It changed the way they approach things from a safety standpoint. And it's been incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were able to share this with multiple agencies. They went and did talks all over the country, and it definitely did make AirEvac kind of look internally. I think AirEvac has an amazing track record, safety track record. I think, you know, all of the big agencies out there do really well. I mean, I've been involved in multiple, and yeah, they all say the same thing. Obviously, you have your agencies out there that may not follow exactly what others do, but I think AirEvac is somebody that you can say definitely walks the walk and talks the talk, right? They really truly do that. So, you know, I think we definitely had a situation where they, you know, when you talk about throttle, fuel, rotor, brake, battery, you know, however you want to do that, usually it's when you're on the ground we're talking about that.
Yeah,
like they were in the air.
Yeah,
they had a true emergency. It,
like, there's no more truer emergency than what they encountered. And I'll tell you, you got it. If you haven't listened to it, go back. This was episode 145, October 2018, and you got to listen to it. It's very emotional, you know, just hearing people talk that within a span of 6 or 7 minutes that they had come to peace with the fact that they were going to die. And then, you know, sort of their life after this. And it's just amazing. So go check out episode 145, Imagining the Unimaginable. Again, just about 22,000 downloads on that. Crazy, crazy. All right. Number four, episode 154, March 6th, 2019. This was one that you did with Ashley again. And this one was called The Second Fracture. And what do you remember about The Second Fracture?
It was kind of a collective idea where I asked her about some cases, and then she started telling me about the cases, and I told her about an idea I had. I actually named the podcast. I didn't name the podcast. Tyler named the podcast. Oh. I was talking to Tyler about it, and he's the one that came up with the name. And then, you know, we sat down and recorded it. And these were cases that she had at the ED as a nurse practitioner, where it just highlights how you can so easily get tunnel vision. You know, it goes into cognitive bias. It goes into that it's not always what you think, and that you really have to look past the blinders. Hmm. And this podcast, I think, really spoke to a lot of people. Had so many emails about this podcast because I think it's so easy to become complacent, so easy to trust what you're told, not reassess your patient. I mean, just so many little things that if you don't do the small things, right? And I think we're defined by that. Yeah. Do you do the small things well? Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to skip those things and say, no, this patient, we've seen it in all elements of EMS.
Yeah.
You know,
and sometimes it's like, I almost think of it as it's like in so many cases, it's not even our fault, right? Like the more experienced you become, the more apt you are to sort of, your brain lets you skip things because you've seen it before, right? It's like a deja vu. I've seen this 7 times, let's say, over 20 years. But that 8th time, if your brain auto fast forwards to the next step and you don't catch that, then you're gonna find yourself, your patient, in a bad place potentially.
Absolutely. Yeah, great podcast, great lessons. I think it's definitely a topic I've been studying and plan on doing some more stuff with on cognitive bias, and I think it's something we should always be reminded of.
Yeah. All right, top three. This one here, episode 137. I'm not surprised by this, to be honest with you. This was July 13th, 2018, and this was the 5 hottest questions in mechanical ventilation. And you had a guest on this one, our old buddy, Mike Herman.
Yeah.
This one had just over 22,000 downloads. And boy, I love Mike. I haven't seen that guy. When were we down there last? August.
It was last year,
actually. Yeah, it seemed like it was a long time. Anyway, tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so Mike Herman is a flight nurse for end level flight care out of Chico, California. He's also our editor in chief, does all of our editing, and just a great guy. Really has been great for Flight Bridge Ed, but really we came to know Mike because of mechanical ventilation, and I think Mike is. I've wanted to choke Mike out so many times because, and it's not a bad thing. I think he is one that he asks questions. He's that type of guy that will ask you a question and you just look at him and you're like, I would have never thought of it that way. Yeah. He asks questions in ways that just make you almost, it's like that student in class where you've heard the you've heard, you think you've heard every question in the world. Yeah. And then, and you've taught the material hundreds of times. Yeah. And all of a sudden you get a question. You're like, where did that come from? You know, I've never thought of it that way. Yeah. And so Mike asked lots of questions like that. And that's really where this podcast, it took us four times to record.
I was going to say, that's the part I remember personally, because I'm editing the stuff. And I remember that there were just constant technical issues.
Yeah. 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 Because we were doing it over, you know, he's in California, I'm in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So really it was the five hottest questions of mechanical ventilation really talked about, we talked about pressure versus volume, you know, hot topic. And really, you know, he was really pushing against pressure. And that was a topic we did at Fast 18.
Right.
Remember we did that competition with Tyler and I?
Oh, I remember.
talked about the best mode, you know, what the thought is. Talked about PEEP application and talked about anatomical dead space, talked about mechanical dead space, kids. And so I think it was topics that I kept getting emails about over and over. And it was just an idea to just do a podcast and kind of do the top five. And he had a lot of questions. That's really where he came in, as he was still really studying mechanical ventilation, still had questions, was not clear on things. And he loves to debate, you know, he loves to kind of banter back and forth. And so I think it made for a good podcast.
He's a little bit of an enigma too.
Oh, he's an enigma.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump down to the number two episode. This is episode 185. You were on a roll here in the 180s, and yeah, that's pretty good. This was July 21st of 2020, so not that long ago, just a year ago. And this was an asthma nightmare case, almost 24,000 downloads. This podcast was about an 18-year-old male who was intubated at a community hospital. What else? But that can't be the end of the story, right?
No, so this definitely was a case. So this was a malpractice case that I reviewed. I changed a lot of stuff about it. The age of the patient isn't what I reviewed, you know, made it an adult, you know, made it a male, you know, just changed things up.
Yeah.
But it really highlighted how easy we could go back to the basics. And what I mean by that is, you know, you start seeing an entitled CO2 climb. And I always talk about this in our courses. Don't worry about the entitled CO2 from the number standpoint. If it's high, it's high. You should already understand why it's high. They're hypercapnic probably because they live hypercapnic. Hmm. And if they don't live hypercapnic and they're hypercapnic, you're not going to change that in 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're not going to die from that unless it's excessively high. But we saw the trial done on our ARDS where Amato looked at driving pressure, and they had CO2s in the 110s.
Wow.
Right, just to lower driving pressure, and patients did all right to protect the lung. Obviously, we don't want to see entitled start off normal, end up at 110. That's not what I'm saying. But when you're talking about a true severe asthmatic, this was an eosinophilic asthma attack. Multiple medications were given. Really, everything was thrown at this patient. Patient was then intubated, crashing when the crew arrived. And it's so easy to forget that in an asthma patient, you not only have an expiratory failure, you have an inspiratory failure as well. At some point, and that's also a product of how you set your ID ratio up. If you set your ID ratio up as at a 1-4, 1-5, like we often teach as a foundation for those patients, you're lengthening that exhalation time out so far, you're limiting the inspiratory phase, right? You only have so much time to do both.
Right.
And so one has to lower if the one's lengthening. Well, if they're already so tight, and how are you going to get that volume in? You don't have enough time. So it's a product of multiple things. So really where I focus this on is, number one, if you see that entitled CO2 climbing, what is the thing that we often always think about as we think about, oh man, my CO2 is getting higher, I must lower that.
And
well, I lower that by making the patient breathe faster. Okay. So if we make a patient in severe asthma, COPD breathe faster, what happens to the E time? Well, it gets shorter.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what was happening is you go back to the basics of, okay, well, if I'm hypercapnic, I breathe faster, I blow it off. If I'm hypocapnic, I breathe slower and I raise it up, right? Well, that is such a, I don't even like teaching that, because that is not in, especially in critical care, you don't want to think that way.
Yeah.
There are so many factors that affect that. This was an example of going back to the basics and saying, oh man, end tidal keeps climbing and climbing and climbing. Well, we got to raise the rate. Well, that was making it worse and worse and worse. You know, and it just compounded on itself. And so there was so many lessons in this podcast. I learned a lot about things, really started focusing on teaching a 1-to-1 ID ratio. And in that type of patient, that really brought an inspiratory phase of 3 seconds, expiratory phase of 3 seconds. So you give equality to both those phases. And, you know, we teach that to this day. So very, very important podcast, I think. Really tough patient, not a patient you're going to see a lot of, especially eosinophilic asthma patient, you're not going to see very often.
Yeah.
So it's one of those high acuity, low occurrence types of calls.
Yeah.
And they're stressful.
Okay, buddy. The number one episode. This was episode 107 in May of 2017. And I remember you guys did this while you were on vacation.
Yeah.
I remember that. I don't remember where you were at. Maybe you were in Hawaii. I think
we were in Hawaii.
Yeah. May of 2017. This was the endocrine nightmare. And it was, as I recall, wasn't this the first time you were able to get Ashley to actually? Yeah, that's what I thought. So this was another Ashley Bauer special. So way more popular than Eric Bauer. Is Ashley. And this was a very popular podcast. It was all about endocrine stuff.
Yeah. Another topic that you just hate.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about SAADH and diabetes insipidus.
He makes me teach this on the road.
Anyway. It's good for him. And we all have to learn that stuff. But really it was talking about, you know, DKA patients and do you turn the insulin off if they're,
I remember that,
you know, or do you keep it running and how do you handle the laboratory side of things and tailoring your treatment to these patients? And, you know, it was the first podcast we were able to get her on. She was very nervous. I knew she would do phenomenal.
My favorite part is where she shut you down. She shut you down hard, buddy.
She did.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it's good.
Humble, little humble pie.
Oh, I mean, it's good. Yeah. You know, I loved it. And I told her afterwards, I said, I want you to do those things.
Yeah.
We don't always have to agree.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I know everything. You know, you have a completely different skill set and understanding of things and the way you approach things. And, you know, and that's a great topic we've talked about in many classes.
Yeah.
You get an intensivist, an ER doc, and you ask them that exact question. Do you turn the insulin off or do you keep it running? And you're going to get two different answers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I steer now to keeping it going at a lower dose.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, because of the acidosis side of things. But yeah, a phenomenal podcast. And it's obviously 31,000 downloads.
Yeah. Well, buddy, 200 episodes.
Very exciting.
Proud of you. Proud of all the stuff that FiberJed does. Love the podcast. Still listen to it. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So exciting. You know, excited for the future. We have so much new content coming out. We have the advanced refresher course called ARC. We have what's called the FiberJed Advantage Plus. We have a TCRN course that is just going to blow the industry away. I mean, we have been in the last 4 to 6 months just building content. And so excited to see all that get pushed out and looking forward to number 300.
You never know. It might be just in the next 6 months, the way you're going lately.
Yeah.
All right. So let me get us out of here. On behalf of Eric Bauer, my buddy, I love you. Congratulations on 200 episodes. Mike Verkest, you've been listening to the FiberJed podcast. We will talk to you guys later. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
This has been a production of the FiberJed podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.